This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
So yesterday, late yesterday, came out that a health emergency has been declared for the recent wildfires. Explain more about that.
Yes, so one disaster doesn't preclude another. So while we're dealing with the COVID pandemic, we had these terrible fires. And so there's now a public health emergency up in that area so that we can be eligible for funding for people to clean up some of those damaged areas.
So really a lot of this is about, if I understand correctly, kind of the chain between Federal Emergency Management Agency down to the state, down to the county, and then down to those directly impacted with having lost their homes or having serious damage to their property from the fire.
That is correct.
And the Board of Commissioners is establishing a wildfire hazardous, or rather household hazardous, waste removal webpage. We've got information about that and about how to get signed up for it. It's very time sensitive. All of that needs to be done by next Thursday. So people need to act quickly on that. And I guess the idea here is to, as quickly as possible, get state contractors, get folks to work cleaning up these things that you're particularly concerned about that could be toxic, flammable, corrosive, reactive, and create some kind of an imminent threat.
Yes. So we think that, for example, people may have stuff stored in the shed, and if the shed got destroyed, we'd worry about chemicals or whatever that were in the shed. And so we really want people to be able to get things cleaned up as soon as possible.
And it's interesting, in the midst of all this, I think I probably had not really considered that, but obviously rural properties and any home, you've got a lot of things around. You've also got older properties that could have asbestos. I don't know how that fares in fires, but there's a lot of things there to take a look at.
Well, asbestos is there to prevent fires, so it frequently will survive the fire. But unfortunately, then what happens is it's there for you to clean up later. So we're certainly asking people when they clean up, when there's dusty or asbestos or other kind of things there, that they wear as good-fitting mask as they can find. The N95 or KN95 masks would be appropriate, or just using one of the industrial respirators if you find.
And so obviously a lot of movement there, a lot of work is going to be going on, but yet another impact of dealing with public health. Was this something you had to deal with before in terms of declaring a health emergency?
So we've had an emergency for the COVID situation that was declared by the county. This one was declared by the public health.
Interesting. Well, another component of all the things that are going on right now. I want to talk about the kind of the COVID-19 update for the county. Now, in the last couple of weeks, maybe longer, we have seen an uptick in cases. What are you able to trace these to?
Yes. In August, we were down to just a few cases a week. So we had actually one week where we had three cases. We're now in the 20s. We're seeing that these cases come from many small outbreaks. We don't have any big outbreaks now, but we have lots of small outbreaks, and that's concerning. And they're all over the county. Frequently relate to out-of-state travel. So we have our long list of states, and we've added Missouri to the list of states today, of people who leave, get the disease, and then bring it back. In addition, we're seeing family gatherings and other gatherings contribute to these. We had one small school outbreak, which seems now to be over. And so they're coming at us from every direction.
We still, though, proportionately, are in better shape than a lot of places in Oregon, correct?
We're in much better shape than most places in Oregon, and much, much better shape than many places in the rest of the country. So at one point, I looked at four comparator counties around the country, one in South Dakota, one in Idaho, and one in Georgia. And they're having about 40 cases a day. I mean, we feel overwhelmed at four. They're having 40.
Wow. So for people going forward now with kind of a shift gradually in the weather. We're going to have some rain. Cooler temperatures appear to be here, although things may heat up a bit at some point later in the month. What kinds of things are you particularly concerned about in terms of just the everyday action of residents that could spread the virus?
So we think activities that are indoor and close can certainly do it. So maybe a few weeks ago, if you're going to have a big gathering, you might have had it outdoors. What we've seen is many more big indoor gatherings, and we think that's really a risk for spread. The second thing we're seeing is as people start to travel, going back to school and whatever, that travel can also be an issue.
For the rest of the state, what are some of the hotspot areas in Oregon?
So Oregon actually overall has had a lot of what I'll call, rather than hotspots, they've got a lot of sort of lukewarm spots. So Malheur County has been an issue mostly related to the Snake River Correctional Facility. But previous outbreaks in Morrow and Umatilla and Union counties have slowed down. The big areas we're seeing now in Oregon are related to colleges. So Eugene and Corvallis both have lots of cases, mostly related to kids coming back to school and doing lots of mixing.
And we had a news report on the other day from Eugene, and they weren't necessarily tied to university students, but at least university age students predominantly, with a gathering in Eugene. I think the number was around 100 people spread in this house, outside the house and around the neighborhood. And certainly a lot of concern about that.
It's a huge concern, as people go to these events, especially as they go to house parties, they're frequently not wearing masks. They're frequently lots of contacts, and that's where we see these super spreader events. So one of the things that is becoming more obvious now is this is an unusual virus. Well, I think we had lots of unusualness about it, but one of the unusual things is that unlike most diseases where you'll spread it to a few people, but not spread it to many, this is a disease where you may not spread it to anybody. Maybe 70% of people never spread it to anybody else, but then a few percent of the people spread it to many, many people. So we've all been following what's happened in the White House, and it appears that that was a super spreader event. And the concern is that at this house party, if there's one person there as a super spreader, they're going to give it to 60 people at one time. And that's why we tremendously, tremendously worry about these big indoor parties.
And obviously, Lane County has been, I think there are a couple of days in the past week where Lane County had more cases than anywhere in the state. And while it's a populous county, it is not nearly among the most populous.
Right. So they've had a high rate. So we typically look at the rate per 100,000 per day or per week. And again, we usually are about two or three, some days four cases a day. Per 100,000. Lane County was at 12, so about three times as many cases as we had.
So for the Portland metro area as well, we're seeing some very high numbers some days, other days pulling back a bit. What's it going to take up there to get some things shifted around in terms of the number of cases?
Well, I think what it's taken every time is people to be very cautious about gatherings and to be very cautious about travel.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us, and it'll be a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming up at 1. KQEN Local Talk at 4. And today, it is Northwest Wine Radio. Brian Calvert looking at wine, beer, and spirits around the Pacific Northwest. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with an update on COVID-19 and some related topics this afternoon. We were talking about COVID-19 cases in Oregon. I'm curious about nationally what you're seeing with COVID-19 right now in some of the other states.
We're seeing a tremendous increase. Most states are having a big increase in the number of cases. We're seeing a huge number of cases in the Midwest, especially in Wisconsin. So Wisconsin had to open up a temporary field hospital yesterday because of their overflow. And some places are seeing huge number of cases in their hospitals. So places like North Dakota, a state that does not have a lot of resources, they're really high, and they've been really high for about 3 weeks. So we're very worried about the Midwest.
Interesting. Now, some of these states, though, don't have a lot of people in them, so I find it interesting that they're getting hit up harder.
Yes. This outbreak typically started in very populous areas like Seattle and New York, New Jersey, but most recently has moved to areas which are much less densely populated. So each day I look at the numbers, and I'm always shocked at how many cases they have in a place like South Dakota or North Dakota that has only about less than 1 million people, and they're having more cases a day sometimes than Oregon.
Is there an explanation for that?
I think there is an explanation, several explanations. One is both South Dakota and North Dakota have had some super spreader events. We think that the motorcycle rally was a spreader event. We don't know if it's a super spreader, but clearly a spreader event. The second thing that happened in those areas is that they had a presidential campaign where a lot of people came in. So they've had some big events in those areas, which have been at least temporarily associated with the increase in cases.
Now, are there parts of the nation that are faring especially well in contrast to others?
There are a couple parts of the country that are doing very well. So I think Upper New England, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine have all very low levels of disease. Upstate New York, there are places upstate New York where there are no reported cases. And Long Island, which had a tremendously terrible time with this early on, is doing relatively well. So I grew up in Suffolk County, and they were at over 100 cases per 100,000 per day at one point. They're down now to about 5.5, only slightly more than in Douglas County.
And what would the explanation be for achieving that lower number?
They are very careful about gatherings. They're very careful about masks. They're doing a lot of symptomatic testing. So they're doing all sort of the regular things you should do to bring the number of cases down. In addition, some of this is luck. You know, avoiding super spreader events is really key. And the way to avoid that is just avoid having big gatherings. Although in New York City, there's one or two areas that have had issues, and they've locked them down again. So they're really taking this very seriously in the places that had a lot of disease before.
And we know that around the New York City area, Long Island, anywhere around there, as many people as can with the technology and what their role is, you really see almost everybody that can is working from home.
So a lot of people are working from home in New York. Again, when we look at New York City, they don't produce really any goods. Mostly what they're doing is just moving around information and money, and much of that can be done from home. It gets much harder in areas where people actually need to be at work in meatpacking plants or in industrial plants, and we think that's why, for example, Wisconsin has really had a hard time.
Interesting. Worldwide, let's talk about COVID-19 and as it shifts around, what are the hot spots or particularly impacted areas right now in the world?
So the most impacted areas in the world now are in South America. Brazil, Peru, Argentina, Ecuador, Chile have all had a terrible time of this. In fact, Peru has one of the highest attack rates of anywhere in the world. They've just had a terrible time getting this under control. And it's interesting because Uruguay, which right in the middle of it, has had very few cases. But Central and South America are really, really struggling. Europe, which previously had a high number of cases in March, then went really down, is having a high number of cases, but not really a lot of deaths, suggesting that many of these are mildly symptomatic people. Israel is a country, small country, about 10 million people, had a peak like we did and then a second peak, but we're really concerned that they've had a really big third peak, and their third peak has led to a lockdown now. They're about their 25th day of lockdown, and the case is starting to come down. So there are enough analogies between the U.S. and Israel that we're a bit frightened about what the U.S. numbers are going to look like.
And obviously, there's a lot of shifts, a lot of pivots. This is a bit of an unpredictable situation. From the public health side, from the scientific side, what are some of the newer things about COVID-19 that you're seeing in the research that's out there?
Well, there's this sense that most people are not transmitting the disease, but some of the people who transmitted to lots of people. That's called the K factor, which you heard about this week. The other news that's out this week, which is very big, is about the vaccines. There are now four vaccines in phase three trials. These four vaccines so far are looking pretty good. There was one safety note on the AstraZeneca vaccine. The other ones have not had any safety notes. And we should be knowing fairly soon over the next few weeks about whether this vaccine is effective in preventing disease.
Now, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I certainly could be, is that traditionally when researchers are working on a vaccine, a lot of times that's a multi-year process, maybe 5 years, I think was the number I heard the other day. Is there a danger to trying to rush this, but yet at the same time having such a grave situation that you know, you want something to get done?
So we, as a country, took a strategy to deal with a program called Warp Speed. So typically what happens in vaccine development is they go through phase one, they spend a while analyzing the data, and if the data looks good, then they start to produce enough vaccine for phase two. And then if the data looks good, they start producing enough vaccine for phase three. In this case, the government took the risk that it wasn't going to work and paid for vaccine development from the beginning. But we are told that they have not slowed down any of the safety processes. So I think that if we listen to the FDA or CDC, that we'll get a very safe and effective vaccine.
And obviously a lot of concern locally and elsewhere about the impact of COVID-19 on schools. Talk about that angle.
Well, schools are a big concern. You know, schools are so important for so many reasons. And so we're really trying to do everything we can do to open schools. The problem is when you open schools, that the disease can spread in schools, but most of the disease does not come from the school. It comes from their parents who got the disease at work or somewhere else and then bring it to the school. So we did have one outbreak in Sutherland. Again, that case was a first grader who likely got this disease from his family, went to school. We are able now to get him out of school, and we've had no further confirmed cases. There are two other people with symptoms, but they've had negative tests and presumably may well have something else. So we think we're able to contain that outbreak. But, you know, as we get more cases, we could have more outbreaks in school. And each of these school outbreaks take many, many, many hours to track down and follow.
And that ties into the fact that the schools have reopened, the cohorting, the keeping same groups of kids together today and in a day in a class, and not having so much mixing around a school campus seems to be a big factor.
That was a big factor. So, for example, at the Sutherland School, the cohort was just the class and the teachers. So you could just say that if the class and the teachers, you need to be home for 2 weeks, the rest of the school could go well. In the traditional way we do it, where you might have met on the playground, might have met in the cafeteria, you'd have to close the whole school. So closing one class, much better than closing the whole school.
All right, a lot to consider. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhoff for another look at our COVID-19 situation. Dr. Bob, thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.